Welcome to What's the Story with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Chris Crepetta from Merlin Publishers. We're talking about different routes to market. So Chris, tell us a bit about self-publishing.
Yes, basically self-publishing is when an author publishes his or her own book on their own steam, on their own, or it doesn't mean they physically do everything themselves, but they would commission the various stages themselves without basically the involvement of a publisher. And self-publishing, I'd like to mention, is totally distinct from what we call vanity publishing.
Okay.
Vanity publishing also doesn't involve a traditional publisher. It's when an author goes to a so-called, I say so-called publisher because they're called vanity publishers for a reason. Basically, they are publishers who will do the work for you, so they will edit, sometimes they will design, etc., against a fee, which the kind of ethos of publishing is that's a no-no. It's an author should never have to pay to have his or her work published. If they're going to pay, then obviously it's being done as a self-published, which is fine. There's a whole history, especially in Malta, of self-publishing. We can talk about this. It's a whole history, but which is absolutely fine. But that is self-publishing. So I would really recommend, if anyone, for whatever reason, because they haven't found a publisher, because they don't want a publisher, it's a perfectly legit route to the market to self-publish. But vanity publishing, even internationally, is frowned upon. Even it makes you, you know, no foreign publisher, foreign agent would touch a book that has been vanity published.
Okay, so the distinction again is a self-published book is
self-published. The publisher, the author, is doing it on his or her own, mm-hmm. but not involving a so-called publisher, which you would then pay.
Okay.
So
the companies like corporates who want to do a history of their company or something, they're not realistically going to get a publisher to publish that book.
And that is set for. There might be other reasons, self-publishing. Traditionally, in many countries, it had been looked down upon somehow, which has totally changed with e-books, with digital. It's now perfectly seen as a perfectly legit way. But strangely enough, or not perhaps, in Malta, it was always a very acceptable route to market. We have always had, still have to a certain extent, even major authors who have at various points in their career self-published. My theory as to why that is that publishing in Malta developed very much as a cottage industry for a long time, 60s, 70s, 80s, for different reasons, religious, political, many subjects wouldn't be touched by most
established
publishers. So for various reasons, sometimes it was anything related to religion, sex, politics, you know, with all these taboo subjects. So many authors resorted to self-publishing. So it kind of gave a legitimacy which abroad in those periods of time, 70s, 80s, even the 90s, didn't exist abroad. Abroad you'd do it, you'd self-publish if you really had failed to find any publisher. Here you could have your own reasons to do, maybe with censorship, with whatever historically. So you had big, big names who self-published.
And so today it's still very popular? Is it probably more popular than
it is? Yes, because, I mean, digitally, as we know, the barriers, many of the barriers of self-publishing, which are largely financial, you need to finance a largish print run, distribution, those have gone, obviously. With digital, you're online,
you're there.
Mm-hmm. It also, but even in the traditional print publishing, because of the small size of the country, it has always been more doable. I mean, if you self-publish your book in the UK, you're not realistically going to put them in the trunk of your car and drive around the UK going around bookshops. I mean, most bookshops wouldn't even talk to you without a distributor. Here, it's doable. I mean, again, the bookshop situation has changed, but if you go back 10, 15 years, it's very doable. You go around, you have personal contacts, you either know the bookseller or know a friend who knows it's Malta, so
you can get away with it.
Yes, it's more doable.
But it does actually put quite a lot of onus onto the author themselves to market.
In fact, one of the biggest arguments that authors themselves make against self-publishing is that they say, in an ideal situation, I would rather focus on being a writer than on doing marketing and contacting the media and contacting shops and working with the designer. Of course, there's an element of reinventing the wheel, because of course, if you haven't been working regularly with a designer, with a proofreader, with an editor, there's an element of, you know, not knowing exactly, having to figure out how they work, what the rates are, you know.
Not knowing what is right and wrong.
Exactly.
If you're even if it's your first book, you
exactly.
now consider yourself a writer.
Exactly. But
not necessarily an expert in those other fields.
Exactly, which has a, you know, biggish learning, a steep learning curve.
So it's quite popular. So the upsides are that basically you can get your own book
yes.
printed, whatever, you can tick that box in your bucket
exactly.
list to get that done. What are the downsides apart from the marketing aspect? Is there still this snobbery factor?
As I said, in Malta, there's less of it, but yes, it exists. And if we're looking outside our shores, then yes, there still is a bit of a, especially in print, of a bit of a snobbish, you know, effective kind of self-published, but also the greatest complaint tends to be about quality. Doesn't mean there aren't some great self-published books around, or as you mentioned earlier, corporate situation where obviously the quality will be top-notch. It's just a matter of it not being of interest to the general public.
Exactly,
it's something specific.
Yes.
So that's a different situation. Mm-hmm. But obviously what you do have is with publishers, you have a bit of a gatekeeping, in the sense, or at least you hope there is a kind of situation where there's already been a bit of a sorting, you know, the good stuff from the, you know, unpolished. Yeah, so that situation when it's self-published, you're going a bit blind, even in terms of a reader, a customer. They're not going to have that kind of, there's going to be that risk element. Okay, what is this? Has anyone given their okay, vetted it?
So it's a little bit arrogant almost to be a self-publisher. Obviously, if you look at things like J.K. Rowling, she went to 25 publishers before she
yes.
got published. She could have given up all
exactly.
self-published.
No, I fully understand. I mean, although I'm on the other side, but I do understand, because, you know, we have this conversation quite regularly with authors. You know, if publishers, they say, okay, if publishers have said no to manuscripts, why should I give up on my dream to publish? And fair enough. And as you said, you know, J.K. Rowling and others, it doesn't mean that publishers have said no because it's no good. It could be our fault in not being imaginative enough, not being to think ahead of the curve enough.
I like to think that from my first book, which was rejected about 15 times, actually, and it's still in a drawer somewhere. So what does a publisher expect from an author? So, you know, manuscript that's intact as well as the author can give it, because it's
yes.
not something you just write the first draft and send. What else are you expecting from the author themselves? In terms of the working style, or
you mean post?
Yes,
right.
So
yes.
Sort of received. You've received the manuscript. You've
okay.
said yes. Okay, let's do
yes.
this.
The first thing, which mentioned briefly, is the willingness to edit, both the editing that goes on. You mentioned that it wouldn't be the final product, but I hope it wouldn't be the final product. But I also hope it wouldn't be the first draft. So there needs to be an awareness of self-editing, and also of the willingness to work with an editor. Then obviously there needs to be an amount of cooperation with the publisher when it comes to marketing. You know, there's, you know, author interviews. Marketing has always was, but has become even more crucial to managing to successfully sell and promote a book. And depending on the author, depending on the genre, depending on the style, there might be TV or radio interviews, there might be interviews with newspaper journalists, with bloggers. So, you know, being part of a team, really.
And do you manage then the expectations of the author? You know, you put them in front of a TV camera, in front of a press journalist who then might not be very nice about their book. Is that your job then, in the absence of an agent?
Yes, in the absence, again, I mean, this would be the agent, but in the absence of an agent, yes, you kind of, on the one hand, have to kind of temper the kind of the expectations, and because obviously the moment we do every time mention to an author, okay, the moment you're putting your book out there, you're opening yourself up to criticism, which is not your mum's comments, just, oh my God, what an amazing story. It might well be, but you're opening yourself up to, you know, all kinds of criticism. We've even sometimes done mini training sessions if someone has never been on TV, on the radio, giving
yes.
an interview. We might sometimes, one of us might accompany an author to, you know, meeting a journalist so
to make sure they don't do any of that off the record type communication. And so you commit as a publisher to a base print run for the length of the contract, and then hopefully it sells enough for you to
contracts vary wildly, but usually yes, there would be an agreement on royalties, which are usually worked out as a percentage of sales, and obviously there would be a print run. Over the years, print runs have gone down in number. I mean, 25 years ago, print runs of 5,000 copies in Malta were very common.
Okay.
Nowadays, which is quite something for the size of Malta. Nowadays, obviously, it's really rare. I mean, we're down to 1,000, down to even 500. The only thing keeping most publishers from publishing even less is economies of scale, because the way traditional, again, this doesn't count for e-books, but traditional print publishing, the printing works, is that the less copies you print, the higher the per copy cost is. So you'd end up, if you want to print, say, just 200 copies, you'd end up having to sell it for, you know, very high retail price.
Or end up giving them away as every single Christmas and dinner party
exactly,
present.
Exactly, for the rest of your life.
But you mentioned e-books. How are they changing the landscape locally? I know friends of mine, I personally don't understand them, although my book is actually an e-book and an audio book. I don't get it. I wouldn't like to read an e-book. I've never done it. It just doesn't appeal. What's the general consensus in Malta?
In Malta, there's very little, if any, Maltese content on e-book. There's a few self-published e-books, a few publishers, but very little.
Is that to do with fonts or anything as basic as that, or it's just a...
No, there's various issues. There used to be a biggest issue with the biggest e-book seller, which is Amazon, which wasn't accepting texts in Maltese to sell directly from their website.
Right.
But that was a few years ago. But more than that, it's piracy. Yes.
Okay. Hadn't even considered
yes,
that.
Yes, to be blunt about it. But obviously, with print books, you can have piracy, have photocopying, but obviously the quality is being degraded.
Yes.
With digital, you know, you publish an e-book and you find it on torrent sites alongside the latest episode of Game of Thrones or whatever. You speak to foreign publishers, they tell you that it's a reality that between 40 and 60% of e-book reads are pirated. But the market is big enough for the remaining 40 to 60% to make it feasible. In Malta, quantities are so small that if I remove 40, never mind 60%, of sales, I just might as well, you know, just
not do
go
it.
To the beach.
That's incredible. I hadn't considered that piracy would
because be... Because piracy, yeah, there's no guarantees, obviously, worldwide. It's not just a problem we have. I mean, music companies have it, movie companies have it. But in such a small market, it's such a huge problem that it's always... I'm not saying it's the only, but it's by far, if I had to weight it, I'd say 80% reasons piracy, 20 would be other factors.
So do your authors sort of demand that they want it as an e-book as well as a printed book? Is that becoming the norm?
Yes, there is a request. In fact, so far we don't have our books as e-books, but it's a situation that's constantly in flux, and we're always, you know, reconsidering other options and routes to the market, and it may well change. Because yes, it's first of all, there's a convenience of it. I mean, I love the print book, but I'm running around with an e-book reader, which I use mainly for manuscripts, actually. It's a convenience. There's the convenience of not having to run, or you're going abroad, instead of carrying around 10 books if you read a lot.
How long do you go away for?
No, okay, 10 was a bit of a joke. I wish, but you know, there's the convenience of it.
Yes.
Many authors would like to have their books as e-books. There's also the factor to consider for overseas, their friends or readers overseas.
Yes.
Quite a few authors, it's quite a phenomenon of quite a number of Maltese authors live in and work in Brussels or Luxembourg. There's many authors work as translators there. So obviously there's the extra element of books not being physically available there. They're just print books.
Right.
Not easily available there. So there's a request for digital, for e-books for that reason.
And this way as well, with digital, like you said, you can send it to your friends and your family in Australia, Canada,
exactly,
or whatever else overseas.
No postage.
That's at all. What's your feeling personally is e-books? I know you said you read them. What about for enjoyment? Would you actually read your own favourite novel on a
I have sometimes, yes. I do use my e-book reader to read some novels. Obviously, it might be because of my work, my training. I'm maybe old-fashioned, but I do like the print.
Book.
There's no denying the convenience of it. And, you know, it's midnight. You've read something online about a book. You want to have it now. And no bookshop, no 24/7 bookshop is going to
materialize.
Exactly. You're going to have to get out of bed, out of house, and go about whatever it is. But so there's that convenience. But and in fact, recent figures and research has shown that there's already, because it's such a young technology, starting being a dip, and print books have surged for the first time this past year compared to e-books for the first time in a long number of years.
If you just joined us, you're listening to What's the Story with me, Monique Chambers, and Chris Gruppetta of Merlin Publishers. So, we've talked a bit about e-books. What about audiobooks? I'm a big fan of audiobooks. I feel I can multitask, I can drive, I can do the ironing, I can cook. If I actually need to do a really horrible job, audiobook is the only way I'm going to get it done. How do audiobooks go down locally?
I must admit, I'm quite a recent convert to them. I used to subscribe to the cliche that distances are not long enough in motor for people to, you know, listen to while they're commuting, but probably with the traffic situation, suddenly it is. But I mean, joking aside, I've started to find them really useful, you know, stuck in traffic every morning, there's the school run, there's going back to work, and, you know, sometimes it's over an hour in traffic, and I used to get really upset, And I found audiobooks. First of all, I'm reading or listening to a book, and I love reading, so I'm enjoying my drive. Enjoying is too strong.
Getting through the drive.
Exactly.
Without road rage. Sorry.
Exactly. And also, I've also found this useful for some, you know, really long books that I'm afraid I would give up on. So I've listened to some, you know, these long books on audio, and it's, you know, audio breaks them down quite nicely. And I find, however, the voice is crucial. The voice of the reader is crucial. In fact, most sites that sell audiobooks allow you to download the sample. And I always download the sample, mainly because I would already know mostly what the book is about and have done my homework there, but to see if I'm going to click kind of with
the reader. Yes, if someone has an irritating voice.
Exactly. Then I've been known not to. So, yes, personally, yes, I listen to audiobooks a lot. Locally, I think there's ample room for improvement on that. I think it's still a market that is being discovered. In fact, we are currently working on a non-for-profit, it's a totally free-of-charge project that we're working on with the President's Foundation for Creativity, which is we are creating a set of audiobooks in Maltese for blind children.
Oh, fantastic.
Which will be available free of charge for any not only blind children and with any kind of visual impairment, because it's something we've been asked repeatedly by parents who, you know, would like their children to, and it is a form of exclusion, really, if children can't.
Yes.
It is a big part of our culture, literature, which they can't access. So we're doing it. Working with the President's Foundation, have been really supportive in this, and we're having these, you know, professionally recorded, and we're going to have a set of. So that's another, yet another function of audiobooks.
It's a really lovely, lovely idea, actually. So audiobooks you listen to, like you said, then the heavier books that you might not have chance to listen to or read yourselves. What sorts of books do you read when you have the chance, when it's not work-related, when it's not a manuscript?
Yes, when it's not a manuscript. In fact, sometimes I just say, okay, I'm going to read just for me, leisure reading. I read quite widely, depends. I mean, I have very down-to-earth tastes. I love thrillers and mysteries. I was, because she's now passed away, a big fan of P.D. James and, you know, her kind of, these kind of remote location murder thrillers, which I used to love. For example, at the moment, I've just started the third book. You know, J.K. Rowling is writing these as Robert Galbraith, as a pseudonym, these kind of detective. So I've just started that. But then I read, I mean, it depends. Sometimes I'm in the mood for, you know, for different kinds of books. Prize winners, I have to admit, you know, I hear so much, and not because so much they're prize winners, because you hear so much about them. So
just the intrigue makes you have to read it.
Exactly. I mean,
professional interest.
Exactly. Sort of. That's my excuse, at least.
Other sorts of books that you have lying around the house? Do you have a book in every room? Is that your sort of
more
style?
Or less? Yes, unfortunately, and all the different stages of, you know, being read. And I'm reading The Vegetarian, which is not a cookbook.
Okay.
It's a kind of translated book, which is kind of the premise intrigued me. It's about this relationship situation with this man who is billed in the blurb as slowly turning into a tree, and I was like, that's weird, sort
along
of.
Along with your flying chair.
Yeah, exactly. Weird in a good kind of way, and you know, sometimes it's nice to discover new voices, and you know, someone who's doing something different. And I really find it difficult to pin down. I mean, I used to say I don't read sci-fi, for example, but then I did come across some, you know, interesting sci-fi, you know, these time travel novels that I end up reading.
And so for readers in Malta, is there a sort of genre or types of novels that you'd be looking at as a publisher to get authors to start sending in their work on particular topics,
yes,
particular genres? What sort of thing are Merlin looking for today as a publisher?
Okay, I'll start with children's books, because I find that with obviously a few exceptions, especially the big names, but with those exceptions, we tended to be quite conservative in the kind of stories we told. So there has historically been a lot about village life in Malta, and even what kind of village life that maybe doesn't
exist,
or at least exists in a small, you know, the city. So city novels, so to speak. There is a trend towards, you know, authors writing children's books in a more adventurous fashion, even in terms of genre. But still, there's much more that can be done with non-children's. I mean, again, there are interesting. What I find is missing, strangely enough, is what is sometimes disparagingly called middlebrow fiction.
Okay.
Which I don't find disparaging at all, in that there is a lot of highbrow literature, even very good highbrow literature. Then there is the kind of, there's the run of the mill, you know, but the kind of middle, something in between, something that isn't, you know, too highbrow that you might just want to read, you know, on holiday, but still you'd want a good read. I find that we have very little of that.
Okay.
I won't go into the reasons, because I don't know myself why, but I find that that is one area, one gap for, you know, just something you want a good read.
Good
you want
beach
to read,
read
exactly,
of.
Good beach read, not rubbish, but not something that, you know, you need to, you know, really at the end analyzing something and concentrate 100% on.
Now, some books should actually just be entertainment. You don't always
exactly.
want to have a dinner party conversation about
exactly.
it.
Exactly, absolutely.
In my humble opinion.
Agreed.
So we're looking for some submissions there. So to check out your website, which is
www.merlinpublishers.com.
For your submission
guidelines. Yes, there's the submission guidelines there. And as I said, I mean, the more unusual, the better. So there's the submission guidelines don't limit the genre, quite the opposite. What they do indicate is how many chapters, how we'd like to receive them, format, synopsis, these practical things.
And a typical, this is probably a very stupid question, but a typical book length would be, for a children's book, for example, the story ends when the story ends, but if it's a picture book.
Exactly. I mean, it's usually, whenever authors ask me, I tell them, you know, just initially, just write, because there's the danger that an author will either pad the story to get to a required word count, or else, you know, the other way around. Obviously, there's such a thing as a too lengthy novel, especially if I find, if it's either a debut author or a kind of more unusual genre, because obviously there's a practical consideration that the more lengthy it is, the more it will put off casual readers.
And what about short stories, collections of short stories? Is that something that would be of interest to...
Yes, yeah. We do publish quite a few. Traditionally, not only in Malta, but elsewhere, short stories suffer as a genre in terms of sales. Many people, this is interesting, because many people will say they enjoy reading short stories, but then buying them is another thing.
So perhaps that's something for the ebook genre or the audiobook genre, where you have, well, not genre really, the method of publication.
Absolutely.
Because then you don't feel like you're overpaying for few words.
Absolutely. And it's also, there's many people comment that if they're getting into a story, they like to get used to the characters, they get fond of the characters, so they don't, you know, want to give them up after 5,000 words, but they want to go on with them for like 20, 30, 40,000 words.
I get very angry with my favourite authors because they don't write fast enough.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I finish the book and then I still have to wait another year or so for the next one.
What are you waiting for? Come on.
I should write to them and tell them, actually. Well, we've been speaking to Chris Grappetta of Merlin Publishers. Thank you again. This is the second interview that we've had with you, but thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.